you today. My name is Adam, and I'm one of the pastors here, and it's a great joy to bring the word today. And today is our last sermon in our series in the Sermon on the Mount. Today we finish that series, and it's been a rich one, I know. That means that when you come back next Sunday, we'll be launching into a new preaching series here, which I'm not going to tell you anything about, okay? Here's the only thing I'm going to tell you. No church in America will be preaching on the verse that we're going to look at next Sunday. It's that remote, all right? Is that a teaser? Come back for that one. So should be a great time. But today we go to Matthew 7 and we finish out Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. And while you're turning there to the end of chapter 7, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to share with you a promise today that I think is a really fitting way to finish this whole series in the Sermon on the Mount. And I want you to think about this promise, and I even want you to receive it personally as we read together the end of Matthew chapter 7. Here's the promise. If you take everything that you've heard in the Sermon on the Mount, and you begin to obey it, you will become a wise and unshakable Christian. Does that sound good? Does that sound good? It sounds good to me. Unshakable. You will become unshakable, solid, an anchored Christian with a firm foundation. But also you'll become wise and discerning, a thoughtful Christian, a deep Christian. And the way into those things is through obeying the words of Jesus as they're presented in the Sermon on the Mount. And that's a promise for you. And you know what? It's not my promise. It's the promise that Jesus makes as he finishes the sermon in the passage we'll look at in just a second. When Jesus was preaching the Sermon on the Mount, his goal was to do more than just stimulate deep thinking in the people who heard it. He was after more than people just going, oh, wow, that was so profound. That was really deep, Jesus, super philosophical. When Jesus speaks, he intends for his words to actually stimulate action. When he preaches or speaks, Jesus assumes my words will go in deep, they'll change human hearts, and they'll result and they'll stimulate obedience. So it is the doing that counts when it comes to the Sermon on the Mount, and it is the doing that is the key to becoming solid and wise in your Christian life. And I'll have you look with me now in Matthew 7, we'll read about that. Chapter 7, verses 24 to 27 will be our focus for this morning together. Will you read with me? Everyone then who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and it beat against that house and it fell. And great was the fall of it. The 10th and final word in our series is the word do. We've been going through the Sermon on the Mount using 10 words, and today we come to our final word, and it's the word do, not D-E-W, all right, but D-O, which you see here in the passage. And what I want to encourage you to realize is that as we come to the end of this series, the question that we should be asking as a church and as individuals is not, do I understand the Sermon on the Mount? The question that we should be asking is, am I going to do it? That's the question for today. So I can take you to the moment when I got up from the table at the restaurant, stood up, walked around to the side of the table, reached into my pocket and pulled out a ring and got down on one knee and asked Kathy Williams to be my wife. I can take you to that moment because that moment, right before I mustered up the courage to stand and do something, that moment is seared in my conscience. I remember it vividly. It was such a crucial moment, a critical moment in my life. We were sitting together at a restaurant. We were out for dinner in Salem near campus where we went to college near Willamette. And we had gone out to dinner and there we were. It was March 17th, okay? And I was 21 years old. I was incredibly old and I was incredibly wise and mature and I knew everything that was going on. And I'm looking across the table at Kathy Williams and I knew. It was like I knew in that moment, this girl is incredibly special. Like I'm probably never gonna meet another girl who is this special. She's so special. And I knew she loves Jesus so deeply, so passionately. I knew it. I knew she will be an incredible mom and she will be a faithful and a loving wife. And I knew we can build something together really meaningful. And I also knew that she was getting really impatient with me. Okay, I knew that too. I knew that because 1 month before she told me that she was getting impatient and she was like, hey buddy, graduation's coming. Is there a ring in my future? So I showed up to this dinner with a ring in my pocket. But here's the thing, all that knowledge, all that stuff that I knew all kinds of stuff about Kathy. I knew all kinds of stuff in that moment. None of that knowledge was gonna get me anywhere until I made a decision to stand up and do something about it. None of that knowledge was gonna change the situation until I acted. So I took a deep breath, I mustered the courage, I stood up, I got down on one knee, and I said, Kathy, I love you, and I want to spend the rest of my life with you. And you know what's amazing? She said yes. Can you believe that? She said yes. Isn't it true? Think about this. Isn't it true that the most critical moments of our lives almost always happen when we make the decision to act? Isn't that true? Those tend to be the critical moments. And that's the moment that Jesus is creating as he finishes the Sermon on the Mount. So when you read this passage, here's what Jesus has done. He said, I've preached this entire sermon, and now what I'm doing is I'm bringing you to the moment of decision. You have a decision to make as I finish my sermon. And the decision is this. Am I gonna take what Jesus has said? Am I gonna take his words? And am I gonna make a decision to do something about it, to make a change? Or am I just gonna allow those words to come in one ear and out the other and be like the person who only hears Jesus but doesn't do anything in order to follow him? That is the critical moment in the sermon. And that is the critical moment for our lives as followers of Jesus. It's crucial. I like to say that the most crucial moment on Sunday morning, the most critical moment in your Sunday worship experience is the moment when the service has ended and you have a decision to make. What am I gonna do about what I've just heard? What am I gonna do? Now, the worship is crucial, the preaching is crucial, the word of Jesus Christ is critical, but the most critical moment happens at the end when you're sitting and you've reflected and Jesus has been speaking to you and you make a decision and you either decide, I'm gonna do something or I'm not. And that tends to be the moment that sets apart people who are truly following Jesus, from people who only think they're following Jesus. That's the moment. I was thinking this week about what the lunch conversation was like after the Sermon on the Mount, you know? I was thinking about that. And I was imagining, you know, there's people, they've heard Jesus, the sermon was amazing, and a group of friends, they're like, hey, that was awesome, let's go out for lunch, you know, let's go get Mediterranean food or something. So they get together, and they're out for lunch, and they're doing what we always do. They're talking about the sermon. They're like, that was so profound. Man, that was deep, that was rich. Jesus is super metaphorical, salt and light. Whoa, it was amazing. And they were astonished, we know that, right? Can you look with me at verse 28? We know people were astonished. They heard the sermon and their mouths dropped and it took their breath away. And they said, we've never heard anyone speak with that kind of authority. But here's my question, is astonishment enough? See, I don't think so. I think it was good that they were astonished, but I think that Jesus is after more than astonishment. I think he's after life change. So what I hope happened at that lunch conversation was that somebody was reflecting and they said, you know what, because of what Jesus said, I have to stop looking at women with lust in my heart. Like, I have to stop doing that. I've been doing that and Jesus was clear and I want to stop and I'm going to stop. I'm going to stop looking at all that stuff that is creating all these problems in my life. I hope somebody at that lunch table said, you know what, I'm going to stop in my heart running towards divorce with my husband. I'm gonna stop going in that direction in my heart because that is not the will of Jesus in my life. I hope somebody said, man, I am gonna stop hating that guy at work who's a total pill because Jesus said, love your enemies. And I need to obey Jesus and love my enemies. I'm gonna stop. And then you begin to realize, see, that's the moment. That is the critical, decisive moment where you go from a head full of information and knowledge and things that you've heard to a moment where you say, I'm gonna make a decision and I'm gonna decide to obey. I'm gonna decide to do. And this morning, what I wanna do is I wanna encourage you today to be a hearer and also a doer of the word of Jesus in your life. And I'm gonna do it by sharing three observations about this passage and its context. I'm going to put these on the screen so that you can write them down and take them with you today. Here's the first thing that I think we need to observe together about this passage and about the Sermon on the Mount. The commands in the Sermon on the Mount can never be done without a vibrant relationship of faith in Jesus Christ. You have to start there. You have to start with a relationship. Because if you don't have a relationship with Jesus where your heart has been changed, you're never going to be able to obey anything that he says. It's not possible. It's not possible to obey. People luck out, and here and there, they'll get something right. But if you ever want to get to a place in your life where you're able to obey the full range of all that Jesus taught and obey it in its depth, you have to have a relationship with Christ where your heart has been transformed by grace through faith in Christ so that your emotions change, your desires change, and your thinking changes from the inside out. You have to start there. You have to start there. And the reason I know you have to start there is because Jesus starts there at the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually take you back now to how the sermon begins. We're going to go back to week one, where we started. And I want to show you the connection between the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount and the end of the Sermon on the Mount. Go to chapter 5 and verse 2. It's the Beatitudes. And what I'm going to point out as we read this is that Jesus does not begin the sermon with commands. He begins the sermon with blessings. He doesn't begin the sermon with what you're supposed to do. He begins the sermon with what God is going to do. And what God is going to do is he's going to bless some people. And who's he going to bless? Let's find out. Will you look? I'm just going to read several of them, starting in verse 2, chapter 5. Jesus opened his mouth, and he taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied." God blesses people, and who does he bless? He blesses people who are poor in spirit. What does that mean? He blesses people who recognize, God, I do not have the spiritual resources to obey you. I come into this relationship totally empty-handed. I have nothing to bring. And then God says, okay, and he blesses. God blesses people who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Why would you hunger and thirst for righteousness? Because you know how deeply unrighteous you are in your own human sin. You know, I'm so far from the righteous standards of God that I feel like I'm starving for righteousness. And then God says, I'm gonna bless you. I'm gonna bless you. God blesses and he blesses and he blesses. And then what happens is you begin to realize the Sermon on the Mount, before Jesus tells you anything to do, he tells you what God has already done through the power of the gospel. He pours out his grace. He unites you to his son, Jesus Christ, in a relationship of faith, and you get a new heart, and you get a new beginning, and you get new desires and new emotions. And now, and only now, do you have any hope of wanting to or trying to obey the Sermon on the Mount, or the commands in the sermon. I was thinking this week about how the order is so important. Blessings first, and then commands. And even in our church, you've probably noticed that we ask people in our church to take the gospel class before we have them take the mission class. Have you noticed that? That's intentional. We say, before you go take a class called the mission class, where you try to figure out what you're supposed to do, the very first thing you need to do is go and take the gospel class and learn about all that God has already done in grace through Jesus Christ. That order mattered. How weird would it be to start with a bunch of demands and obligations and things you have to do when you don't know yet what God has done to change your life and your heart and your desires? Or if you come to Introducing River West, our class for new people to the church, we always share these four words at that class. And they're kind of the four words that we use to describe the whole mission of our church. So if you've been, you know, we always say, here are the four words that capture like the heart of our core values. And the four words are Jesus, gospel, church, and world. Every single one of those words is deeply important, but you know what else is important? The order that we share them. It starts with Jesus. He's ultimate reality. He's the living word of God. He's the second person of the Trinity, God incarnate. Jesus is ultimate. If we don't have Jesus, we have nothing. Then we go to the gospel and we learn about all that God has done in Christ to save us and change us. Then we talk about how important it is to be a part of the church, God's family, his community. And finally, we realize that God is launching us out into the world to do things in his name. And that order matters. It matters. So Jesus starts with the blessings, then he goes to the commands. But can I have you look at chapter 5 and show you something? So if you look at chapter 5, you just look at the structure. You got the Beatitudes at the beginning, and you got salt and light. And then you get into the stuff where Jesus starts to say, okay, here's what you're going to do. And as you're reading it, I hope what's happening to you, because it happens to me, is you start reading and you go, this is impossible. Like, this is totally impossible. No one can do this. Jesus will say something crazy like verse 20. I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and the Pharisees, you'll never enter the kingdom. And you're like, that's intense. That's impossible. Or later he'll say, you have to be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. And you go, that's impossible. Or Jesus will say, You've heard it said, don't murder. But I say that if you even feel or express anger towards a brother or sister in Christ, you've committed murder in your heart. And then you go, that means I'm a murderer. And all of that impossibility, that standard that's so high, what that does is you get there and then it sends you right back to the Beatitudes and you fall on your knees again and you go, Jesus, I'm so poor in spirit. And I'm hungering and thirsting for righteousness. And then you repeat the cycle again. And you go and you read the commandments and it's impossible and it drives you back into your relationship of faith with Jesus. And don't you realize that's actually intentional? Jesus did that on purpose to keep you connected with him, because there's no way to obey Jesus if you don't have a relationship of faith with Jesus. There's no way. It's impossible. I was thinking that when I got up from the table that day and proposed to Kathy, I didn't stand up and do something because of all of this knowledge that I had about her, you know? I didn't go, oh, I know so much about her, so it makes sense that I would propose, right? And I didn't get up, actually, I didn't stand up out of a sense of obligation either. I didn't stand up and go, man, I really don't want to do this, but I feel like I should. Feeling obligated. I'm a little resentful. We have to get married. She wants a commitment, you know. I didn't do any of that. You want to know why I stood up and did something? Because I loved her. Because we had a relationship. And I wanted to love her even more, and I wanted that relationship to grow in greater depth and intimacy, so I did something. And so it is for you. So it is for you. So what I'm going to have you do this morning is I'm going to encourage you to think about your relationship with Jesus Christ and just reflect on it and ask the question, is that relationship one of faith where I regularly experience Jesus changing my heart and my desires and where I feel always this increased longing to obey him, to hear his word and do something? That relationship is so vital. And that's the first observation. Okay, here's observation number two. Hearing and doing are the two essential ingredients for a solid foundation in your Christian life. Hearing and doing, they're both essential. They're like two ingredients, and when you mix them together, they create something really firm in your life. But if you take away one of them, there's nothing firm anymore. And that's the meaning of this metaphor that Jesus uses about the wise and foolish builders. So go back to chapter 7 and let's look at it again. It's short, so we'll read it together one more time. And now we're going to try to understand, what is this metaphor about building and foundations? Let's get to the meaning. Verse 24, Jesus says, everyone then who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and they beat on that house, but it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and they beat against that house and it fell. And great was the fall of it. Now, what I want to do, and I think what will be helpful first, is to show you how much these two builders actually have in common. The point is to contrast them, and we're getting there. But what's interesting is before you contrast them, you have to realize how startlingly similar they are. So I made a list of similarities, which I'll put up here. Here's the first one. It's probably the most surprising one. They both hear the words of Jesus. Did you notice that? Verse 24 and 26. Both of these people are hearing Jesus. And that's interesting. So Jesus is not saying, hey, you got one person who's never heard the words of Jesus, not hearing the words of Jesus. Contrast that with a person who is hearing the words of Jesus. That's an easy contrast to make. But how strange to realize that both of these people are sitting in church together. They're sitting in church together. They're hearing the same sermons. They're sitting in Bible study. They're hearing the same teaching. The words of Jesus are flooding over both of them. And that's what makes the metaphor so unsettling. Because then the person goes, well, wait a minute, which one am I? Which one am I? So they're both hearing the words of Jesus. Here's a second similarity. They both want to build something meaningful in their lives. They both set out to build something, a house, something meaningful. It's universal. Every human being wants to build something meaningful. I've never met a human being who said, I'm really interested in living a meaningless life. That would be like amazing. I want to have no purpose, right? That'd be really easy to do, right? But that no one wants that. We all want to do something meaningful. We all want to build something meaningful with our lives. And then here's the third thing they have in common. They both choose a foundation. They're hearing the words of Jesus. They want to do something meaningful, build something meaningful, and they both choose a foundation. Because everyone, at the end of the day, every human being builds their life on something. Something solid. A basic principle or a worldview or a source of authority. First principles. Everyone, you have to build your life on something. And what Jesus is saying here is he's saying, what I need you to do is I need you to ask the question, will that foundation hold firm when the storm comes? Will that foundation be there and hold me up when the inevitable happens? The wind blows and it beats against my life. Will I still be standing? And that brings me to the final thing they have in common, which is they both experience the trial of the storm. Everyone experiences the trial of the storm. Let me tell you really quick, I absolutely am convinced that the storm is referring to the final judgment. That day is coming for every human being. And the reason I believe that's true is that at the end of the little parable, Jesus, he says that second house fell and great was the fall of it. And it almost has this warning, this eschatological warning to it. But I also think that the storm means things that we experience in this life, trials and difficulties because we live in a broken world. And horrible things happen, and things happen where that blow up what we hoped or expected would happen. And we hurt and we feel abandoned and betrayed. And Jesus says, that is going to happen to you. And the question is your foundation strong? You know what? In my ministry as a pastor, the hardest thing about ministry is actually not walking with people through storms. Because that's inevitable. Like, I'm expecting that. You know what the hardest thing is? The hardest thing about ministry is walking with someone through a storm, someone that I love, and watching them discover that their foundation is sand. That's the moment where it's painful. Where a person experiences hardship and they go, you know what? Forget you, God. I'm giving up on you. And then I'm realizing their life was built on sand, not on a solid rock. They're just chucking their faith in that moment, and it's deeply painful. So they have so much in common, and that helps us see the crucial difference between the two of them. And now we're ready to hear. Here is the difference. One of them hears the words of Jesus, and he does them. And the other one hears the words of Jesus, and they go in one ear, and they go out the other. And Jesus says, that's the difference between wisdom and folly. That's the difference between a solid foundation and a foundation of sand. That ultimately is the difference between a person who's following Jesus and a person who only thinks they are. People who want to do the Sermon on the Mount are on a road to wisdom. I want you to hear this because I want to encourage you. People who want to obey the Sermon on the Mount are on a road towards wisdom and stability. They're people who want to build their whole life around the teaching of Jesus. And they want to hear it and they want to obey it. And those people are building on a firm foundation and they're growing in wisdom and depth. And I know how many of them are sitting in this room right now, because over the course of the Sermon on the Mount, you've been responding to us in emails and phone calls, and it's been so encouraging to hear from you. Emails like people following up and saying, man, that sermon was so convicting on loving my enemy, and can we meet and talk about that? I'd love to meet with a pastor because I have this difficult, horrible person at work, you know, can we meet and talk about that? And we say, stop wasting our time. Of course not. No, we say, of course, let's meet and talk about that. People emailing and saying, man, I know I need to forgive. I need to forgive, but forgiveness is so hard for me right now. Can you help me understand forgiveness? Of course. People emailing after the sermons on the Lord's Prayer saying, what were those five words, those convictions? I want to pray that prayer daily in my life. Can you send that to me? Of course we can. People asking for marriage counselors or other kinds of advice. And it's this depth and wisdom and growth and maturity. And so here's the moment where I have to ask you, is that a description of you? Do you want to obey Jesus in your life? I hope you do. Because the alternative, according to Jesus, is a person who doesn't obey and their foundation ends up being sand. So we get to that part of the metaphor and people kind of scratch their heads. They're like, sand? I mean, who in their right mind would build a house on sand, right? Who would invest all of the resources in the wood or the mortar or whatever and then lay all that on sand? That's ridiculous. To which Jesus says, precisely. It's as ridiculous as thinking that all you have to do is hear my teaching but never obey it. That's how silly it is. It doesn't make any sense to live that way. And so Jesus says, don't live that way. And we kind of fool ourselves. We find ways to deceive ourselves into thinking that we're obeying Jesus when we're not. There's a YouTube video right now, and it's starting to go viral. And later you can go look at it. It's created by a Christian father and his daughter. They made this together. She's a high school kid. And they heard a sermon about obedience. So they made this video called How Not to Obey Jesus. And in the video, the father walks past his daughter's bedroom and it's totally thrashed, which I'm really familiar with, okay? So he walks past and he gets super disconcerted look on his face and he walks downstairs in the living room and there's his adolescent daughter and she's sprawled out on the couch, you know, watching Netflix with her headphones in. And he walks in and he's like, hey, I thought I told you to clean your bedroom 3 days ago. Like, what's the deal? And she goes, yeah, you did. You told me to clean my bedroom 3 days ago. And he's like, well, what have you done? And she goes, I did all kinds of things. Like what? She goes, well, the first thing I did is I memorized the command. I memorized what you told me to do. Clean your room. I committed that to memory. And it was really like a meaningful spiritual experience. And he gets confused. And then she goes, then I went on Amazon and I bought a book called 5 Reasons to Clean My Room. And I read that book and it was really profound. Like every reason was, there was like a strong argument. Then I had all my friends over and we had a small group together and we talked about the merits of cleaning my room. It was really deep and spiritual. Do you see, you obviously see where it's going. So here's Jesus saying, do not deceive yourself into thinking that a bunch of spiritual activity is the same thing as radical and immediate obedience. It's James. The author of James said, do not just be hearers of the word, but be doers. And then later he said, that's actually what true faith is. Real living gospel faith is a faith that always issues in action, always. If there's no action, it's just a faith that's dead, right? So how about you? Are you hearing and then doing? Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to share my final observation really quick, and this one's where it's going to be practical. This is where I'm going to tell you to do something. Here's observation number three. Obedience to Jesus must be practical and daily, or it's totally worthless. It's nothing. It's got to be daily. It has to be about a relationship where I'm hearing from Jesus, I'm reading his word, and then I immediately say, okay, I'm going to obey today, Jesus. And it has to be practical, concrete. It can't be just some obedience in theory. It's a moment where I'm hearing Jesus and then I decide he's asking me to stop doing this and to start doing this. And I want to obey him, and I'm going to obey him. With everything that I can, I'm going to try to obey him. So here's what I'm going to ask you to do. This week, I want you to every day go back and read through the Sermon on the Mount. And here's the first thing I want you to notice. Notice how much of the Sermon on the Mount implies that Jesus expects us to do something. You'll be totally blown away. You'll read and you go, wait a minute, I'm supposed to do that. I'm supposed to stop doing that and just command after command after command, teaching after teaching. The whole thing is supposed to be practical and real life, real time, concrete, rubber meets the road. Like, I need to do this today. So do that first, and then pick one paragraph each day and read it and let Jesus talk to you and get real specific, and then grab a pen and write and say, here's what I need to do to obey Jesus. Start with anger. Read Matthew 5, verses 21 to 26, and then go, Jesus, who am I angry at? Who am I expressing anger at? And then make a decision. I'm going to obey you, and I'm going to pray for a changed heart and just obey. I did that this week, and it was really powerful. Each week, I took a different paragraph, and I listened, and I wrote something down, and then I tried to the best of my ability to obey Jesus. And when I failed, I ran back onto my knees and I received grace and mercy from the giver of life. Amen? Because he's so good. He loves you so much. Now, the commandments are not just in the Sermon on the Mount. This obviously, it applies to all kinds of commands that Jesus has said. Jesus commanded us to be baptized. And he's commanding you to be baptized. If you're following Jesus, you need to get baptized. And if you've not been baptized, today, in 10 minutes, the moment will come, right? That moment of decision. And you can decide and say, I'm going to go back into the connect room and I'm going to sign up for understanding baptism. Do you see how seamlessly I transitioned to promoting the Connect Sundays, right? I'm going to make a decision. They've been badgering me about baptism, and I'm finally going to take understanding baptism. Jesus commands us to be in community with each other. So make a decision and say, I'm going to check out a growth group or a Bible study. Jesus commands us, like, know the word, hide the word in your heart, learn the word of Christ, learn the gospel. Maybe it's time for you to take the gospel class. We're offering two classes that are new. They're really significant. Pastor Christopher is offering a Bible workshop where you learn about the different genres of the Bible and how to read it and how to interpret it. And there's already a group of 20 folks signed up to take that class. He's going to start out with the Pauline letters, the epistles. How do you read those? How do you interpret them? Take that class. It'll totally bless your life. Eric Lowe is teaching a class called New Testament Survey. And it's going to be a class where he's just going to show you the scope of the whole New Testament, how it was put together and why. That's a continuation of our Old Testament survey classes that Paul Coleman taught. So if you took those, sign up and take a class with Eric Lowe. You'll be blessed, okay? Here's the last thing I'm going to say. The moment is coming here in just a few minutes where you're going to have a heart moment with Jesus. And he's been speaking to you. I know this because his word is power. His word is authoritative. He's been talking to you. And you're going to have a moment that's the critical moment. It's the moment of decision by his grace. And what I want to encourage you to do is make a decision to obey Jesus because you love him and because you want to obey him and you want to grow.